How can I help you?
Oh, hello, hello. Is this free audio drama rugged tech support?
Yeah, sometimes, I guess.
Right, well, my FET head has wobbled off my deluxe telescopic boom arm and collided with my preamp, which bounced into the air.
Knocked off my Audio-Technica ATH-M29Xs and, well, do you know, they smashed my iOS 11 upgrading this Max MC Windows laptop of joy.
Setting a light to my USB connection, and now I can't find anything, and I can't XML code my RSS feeds because I forgot my password, and I just feel my life is being ruined. What can I do? I just want to plug and play.
Yeah, I've seen this before. Have you tried turning it off and back on again?
Well, I tried to, but...
It's the reason why I'm calling you. It's on fire.
Oh, well, then you'll want to install the H2O bucket liquid cooling system.
How do I do that?
Well, do you have a hardware store nearby?
Yep.
Okay, go there, buy a bucket, fill it with water.
Throw water on the fire.
Well, I'll try that. Thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
Oh, and don't forget to keep recording. It'll be audio gold.
Welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Misha Stanton.
And I'm Sarah Golding. Hello. And today we're looking at some diverse recording setups. And do you know, I rack my brains. Who could we get on the show who has more expertise and knows more about the world of audio tech than Misha Stanton? Hello, Misha. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's very exciting because essentially you have sound designed, produced and mixed, a lot of the podcasts of best of lists of 2015, 2016, 2017 and more. So just if we can narrow it down,
yeah,
just a little bit, can you possibly give us some of your career highlights for this last year? What have you really enjoyed getting your teeth into?
Oh my goodness, just this year? Well, this year, season 3 of Ars Paradoxica has been airing, which is really great and feels like a much tighter story than we've ever told before. I launched The Far Meridian, which is a fantastic magical realist audio drama that has its season finale on Monday, on Christmas Day.
I can't wait. I love that show. It's very calming. It's very chilled and it's a calming show.
Oh my gosh. It's so soothing, and especially because this year has been so rough. I just wanted like a nice little safe place where I could just like cozy up and listen to a nice story.
For sure. Yeah, I kind of expect to find people lying down in the street or just in parks just because they're just chilling and listening to The Far Meridian. Yeah, just like, I'm in the zone. And what else? What else? Come on, tell us.
The Bright Sessions. We wrapped season 3 and then started season 4. The season 3 two-part finale we did in like a big studio, and that was super cool. Did I do an episode of Our Fair City this year? Did I do an episode of Bull 359 this year? I think those were this year. Yeah, and I made a show called Pen and Pencil for the Wondery Network. It was like a nice little office sitcom. It went inside our show, I Hate My Boss.
Yes, 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 I do love that. Hooray for Wondery. There's changes afoot. But anyway, if you haven't heard that, do look it up and jump on that. It's very funny. And to be honest, Misha, everything you do, everything you touch turns to gold. So what is your secret? Come on, what do you do? How do you do it? How do you do it?
I've just been doing it for a really long time, honestly. I started doing sound design when I was 12 or 13, and I've just been doing it this whole time, and I'm turning 26 on Tuesday.
Oh, happy birthday.
And so it's just been like, no, I'm turning 26 on Tuesday, and so that's like the majority of my life. So I've just been doing it since I was a child, and I just keep doing it, and I guess I'm pretty good, I guess.
I guess you are. It's a proven fact now, to be honest.
Okay.
I mean, there's no getting away from it. Do you know, you should have it tattooed upon you. Misha, Midas Misha, everything he touches turns to audio gold. Anyway, so listen, the focus of this show, let's concentrate on that, is on tech and tech gear. And I'm sure you've probably gone through, quite a few changes on what you own and what you use. But can you tell us what you're using currently in your home studio when you record, say, the Bright Sessions and the other shows you do?
So I have a recording booth built into my closet. It is built out with acoustic foam and it sounds very nice. In there, I have two Audio-Technica 2035 microphones. Those connect to my Scarlett 18i20, which has 8 inputs, 10 inputs? Yeah, something like that. I have Sennheiser HD280 Pro headphones. I have 2 Yamaha HS5 monitor speakers on my desk. I have a Mac Mini that runs the latest Pro Tools as of yesterday. It just got compatible with Mac High Sierra, so I just updated that. I think that's the whole rig here.
Superb. And can you just talk us through why you specifically chose those items and what drew you to them, to use them specifically?
Well, I guess I'll start with Pro Tools. I learned how to do Pro Tools in college, and it's just sort of what everybody ran, and so now I've been running it for 10 years now, and it's not particularly better or worse. I will say that I live in LA, and a lot of film and post-production work uses Pro Tools, so it's good that I know it. But it's not better or worse than anything else you could find, really. It's just what I happen to know. The monitor speakers on my desk, the Yamaha HS5s, have a very, very flat response, which means that they produce as flat a power-to-frequency ratio as possible. It represents all frequencies sort of equally. And while music producers might like a brighter sound or a warmer sound to their speakers, for audio drama, it's really important to have a flat response so you know what all your sound effects sound like together. Mm-hmm. Yep. The HD280 Pros are pretty similar in that they have a fairly flat response. They also held up really well on the road when I was a tech on tour. So I was sort of an itinerant concert and stage tech for a couple of years, and they stood up really well to like weather and being thrown around in my bag and stuff.
And with regards to your interface there, how many people would you be recording at once?
I've recorded 7 people at once for the Bright Sessions on this one device.
Yeah, and people are really hungry, aren't they, to get that information as to best practice, how and where you place those mics in that group recording situation. Can you give us your top tips on what you would do?
I don't know if I want to prescribe things that people should do. What I'll say is when we did the Bright Sessions, so this was episode, I don't know, late 40s. It was recently, there were 7 people in it. They really like to be able to see each other. Being able to look people in the eyes is really important for the actors in the Bright Sessions, and that's their process. So we had them all sit in a circle, and I just pointed an amalgam of mics at people, and sort of as I was doing it, I considered the pickup pattern of each microphone. Do you guys talk about pickup patterns on this show?
Well, just talk us through what that means, if you like.
Cool. So a pickup pattern is the shape around a microphone that it picks up, like where you can talk into it and it'll pick up sound. For my microphones, the AT2035s, they're called cardioid because the shape looks like a heart, where the big sort of round end is in front of the microphone, so you talk into the front of it, and then that little dip in the heart is in the back, so if he's talking to the back of it, you won't pick up anything. There are supercardioid, there are hypercardioid, which is more like a figure eight, and then there's an omnidirectional, which will just pick up everything. So with that many people, you kind of want to get as directional as possible. I had a bunch of cardioids and then a couple of shotgun microphones, which is what Lauren uses on her day-to-day basis, and tried to position people and pick a pattern so that there would be minimal, you know, sort of crosstalk, because they like to, you know, interrupt each other and come in on top of each other's lines. And I would rather have them do it organically because that's how they get their best performances.
Yes. And people have been on forums, haven't they, talking about that. And you know, what is the best recording practice for the editor? Is it best that people, I guess, unrealistically say their lines and don't overlap each other, so there's a gap between the call and response, if you like, and then the editor's got a clear way into editing the pace that they want for the scenes? Or are you someone that, do you prefer it that there's conversations, natural rhythms, and you can still play with it, but perhaps to a lesser extent?
Honestly, it depends. On Ars Paradoxica, the actors don't ever do their lines at the same time, so I have to do it one way. And if you get actors who are good enough in that style, and I'm not saying that having that skill is like better or worse, it's just another skill you can have. People who can sort of carry on as though they were interrupting or carry on as though they were interrupted. But the Bright Sessions, that cast, like, they're all friends. They all come from the same acting studio. They have a very particular process. And actually, knowing that they do it that way, I know that that's going to be harder for me later to edit out. And I just sort of take on that responsibility and decide, like, you know what, it's worth me putting in that extra work to have the performances be better.
Yeah, though, that's quite a fun topic for discussion, really, because, as I say, there's obviously no one prescribed way of doing it, is it? And I do think it's just interesting or challenging to, I think, for creatives to at least consider doing things another way, if you've got the time, and just to see maybe what worked best for you.
So. I will say we're even messing with that process now. In fact, we just did another episode where there's a scene where Lauren's character, Sam, and another character, Mark, are lying in bed talking to each other.
Yes,
so rather than have them do it sitting up across from each other the way they do most scenes, I had them lie down in the bed and really do the scene and recorded them with Lauren's shotguns.
And did you feel that did give more of a sense of reality to the space?
Yeah, it's going to sound really cool. I'm really excited about it. Not only did it enhance their performance because they were really doing the actions that their characters were doing at the time, but also when you lie down, your breath comes out of your body differently and your mouth and chest are compressed in different ways than when you're standing up. So you actually sound different when you talk. It's subtle and you wouldn't notice it unless I pointed it out to you. But the fact that we're doing that really authentically and that you're going to hear the positions that they're sitting in and how they move is just going to lend to the realism of the show.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I personally record all of these ADPP episodes lying down, and nobody's guessed, but now they know.
Yeah. We didn't invent that trick either. That was a piece of advice we got from the people who make Steal the Stars.
I love that show.
They did a bunch of scenes like that, and then we decided to try it.
Yeah, great. So there's tips being passed on by other amazing shows. So hooray! Just keep it going. Pass it on, folks.
Absolutely.
So, come on. What, in your opinion, should every single discerning audio creative have to make their life easier? What do they need tech-wise?
I don't know. I think, honestly, a lot of people get USB microphones, and that's great for one person doing one thing always, but if you're gonna do anything more than one person ever, you need an interface. You need like a little Scarlett 2i2 I think Motu makes a budget option now. There's M Audio makes a little box. Like, you need one of those interfaces if you want to do anything that's not just single person narrator.
Well, what is it that will add to the recording?
Well, it'll give you finer gain control. It will allow you to swap out microphones if you ever come across a better one later. It's really planning for the future more than anything else. You can keep buying, USB microphones, and the quality of those will increase, but not as fast as professional grade XLR input microphones. And I know that from having worked in live audio for so long. Like, XLR is the industry standard, and anybody making a USB is doing that as like a side project. And when you consider, like, if you want to be doing the tech that everyone else is doing, even, you know, you can even find $50 XLR microphones, but having that interface just allows you to be so much more versatile and plan for your future as you create more and more things.
Yes, great advice. Good. And it is a flooded market at the minute. Oh, you must listen to quite a few shows as well as your own, do you?
I try to. I'm going to be honest. I'm making audio all of my life, and so, like, my downtime is not spent listening to things as much as it could be.
I do know you're not the first person to say that.
We're all so busy making them that we don't have time to listen to them.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, there's so many good things out right now. I'm feeling overwhelmed in a way. But yeah, I find myself listening to a little bit of one thing and thinking, yeah, that's worth some time and investment. So hey, well done, audio world. You're creating far too much. We can't keep up.
Oh, no, more art. What am I ever going to do?
Yes, more. Misha and I need more. We demand more. Okay, so now, What do you feel are, let's say, the kind of rookie mistakes that people are making going into audio? What's not done as well as you think it could be right now?
I think that a lot of people are doing a lot of remote projects now, where they'll cast people from the internet and they'll source from all these different places, and that's fine. I do that, but you have to make sure that the quality is the same across all of those recordings. Otherwise, everyone's going to sound like they're talking in different rooms, and they do. So what we've done on Ars Paradoxica right from the very start was we bought microphones for all of our casts because we knew they were going to be living in separate places, and we bought the same one. mm-hmm. everybody had the same microphone.
Oh, cool.
So even if the rooms were a little different, the quality of the voices, as long as it was, you know, the same distance and the same projection that all of the actors were using, like, you can control that. You can control for those sort of things.
Mm, yeah, a bit of consistency. Like a science experiment, really, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, you get that control in there.
Yeah, you have to have the control. Like, you know that you can't control for certain things. You can't control for, you know, you can't always control for what room everybody's going to be in, what the materials are, whether they're in a city or a suburb or a rural area. So what the different background sounds might get picked up. But you can't, like, you should control everything you can. You can control the model of diaphragm in the microphone that's picking up all of your actors, and you can control, you know, you can have best practices while trying to deaden the room, you know, with foam and towels and blankets and that sort of thing. You want to have everything be the same, and you want to have everything be as good as it can, not just by itself, but with each other.
And say if you haven't got that luxury, say if you've got your lovely, hardworking remote actors sending in lines from all sorts of different equipment and recording environments, how can you advise someone editing that mess of everything together, just some ways into combat all those elements?
In that case, because I also have a couple of those, what that just means is more time for me. You just have to spend more time cleaning up. You have to be really, really careful and really meticulous and really line everything up. You might have to pretty heavily EQ one track to sound like the rest. You may have to. I have some noise removal software, which I know is a little pricey and not everyone can get, but
how much and where is it from? Come on, Spill. We need to find the details.
Sorry, it's I use RX5, Isotope RX5, and that's, I think it's something like $500, which is a lot of money for some starting out people, but really does save your life once you can afford it, which kind of sucks. I don't like that. I think everything should be accessible and free, and we should give it to everybody.
Yeah, they do some deals sometimes, don't they, where they share elements of that program. So, and they do give good discounts. I got a smattering of bits from RSX, actually. So do watch out for that.
Yeah, they're pretty good about advertising. Yeah, sometimes they're like 40% off sales, and that's pretty good.
Yes.
But other than that, it just means like you have to spend the time. You have to make sure that everything sounds the same. You can't let that slip, because that's the biggest thing that will take somebody out of it.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It stops the immersion factor, doesn't it? Yeah. And with regards to pushing those boundaries and making your audio even more amazing in the future, what kind of challenges should those more proficient creatives be aiming to do to enhance their creative awesome excellence?
I love all of the shows that are doing new stuff with recording processes. Steel Stars and now The Bright Sessions is doing cool stuff. And I know a couple of other shows are experimenting with those sort of things. I want to see audio drama be more like theater that was filmed very well. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to see them be more like movies where they're on a soundstage and you have people acting and you're picking them up as they're doing the things that they're doing. I'm hoping to experiment with that for a show I can't really talk about next year. We're going to try getting people all together on a soundstage on a set and putting lavalier microphones on them in addition to shotguns on booms, and we're going to like record it live.
Exciting. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Fun. And will there be a live audience there as well?
No, I don't think it'll be a live audience. I think it'll be it's like we're filming a movie, only there's no cameras.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and it's like all one story. It's like an event mini series. It's hopefully coming out later next year, but I can't really say much more than that.
Uh-oh. Well, we got something out of you. That's fine. As good as a start. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for you on your feed for that. And will that be live Foley as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, that's the plan. Is not only will it just be live Foley, it'll be them doing, the actors doing the live Foley with the real props, you know, having theatrical props and realistic sounds. And of course, I'll be there to fill in the things that they can't do that, you know, I think it there's some technology that doesn't exist that is in that show. So I'll have to do that live, or I'll add it in later, like in post, because, you know, it's like a post-production on a film, because that happens too. We're really treating it more like a film, more like a performance rather than people. I don't mean to say that voice actors aren't performing, but what I mean is getting people out of the booth, getting people out of that little space where you can feel so confined and it can feel a little artificial sometimes, and really getting them up and moving.
Can't wait to see how that goes. That sounds very cool. So now we have got another four people who've been good enough to share with us their home recording networks. And so this episode has Fiona Thrill, Michael Stokes, David Devereaux, and Ryan Baldwin. And so here they are with what they've got and why they've got it.
Hello, my name is David Devereaux. I'm the creator, producer, writer, composer, sound designer, and lead voice actor in Tin Can, which is a small sci-fi audio drama podcast. I don't have many friends. And welcome to my studio. Do you like what I've done with the place? As much as I say it's a studio space, it's genuinely a corner of my living room. And it certainly sounds nice right now, but if I turn off all my noise filters, it's not particularly nice. I mean, even recording that introduction, I had a few problems. My name is David Devereaux. I'm the creator, producer, writer, composer, and... So, full disclosure, I live in a tenement flat in Glasgow, which has very high ceilings. As you can hear from that repulsive echo. I also live right next to a main road, in the middle of three schools, and outside my flat there is a pedestrian crossing. So as you can imagine, recording here is never boring. So right now I'm using a condenser mic. It's a cheap condenser mic bought from a German website for less than £100, which I'm just going to say is less than $110. It's called the T-Bone SC300. It's from a website called Thomann. It's a German warehouse, and they do high-end equipment, but they also have their own in-house stuff. And this is the cheapest condenser microphone they had, and I thought I'd give it a go. And it's what I use for more or less everything. In terms of other microphones, I have a shotgun microphone, which I use for film shooting, film sound recording, and also for sound effects and interviews and things, because it's a very directional microphone. And it sounds like this when you record with it. It's very good for interviews and for recording dialogue in noisy environments because it's very, very directional. Like, if I just move it slightly to the side, there's a dip in audio, there's a dip in volume. I also have a ribbon microphone that I use occasionally for audio drama recording. I'd love to show you what that sounds like right now, but the preamp, which just boosts the signal so you can actually hear it, isn't working right now because a capacitor literally exploded one day while I was recording with it. That was fun. And the worst part is we didn't even get it on tape. For kind of portable recording, I've got a Zoom H1 and a Tascam DR40, which I don't really use for audio drama, with the exception of getting ambiences and sound effects not at home. The H1 is what most of the sound effects for Tin Can are recorded on, so the kind of ship ambiences, the movement noises, the doors opening and closing, they were all the sounds for those were recorded on the H1, which is not bad considering it's like the lowest level of portable recorder. But anyway, back to my main setup. So I'm using a condenser microphone that's on a mic stand. I've also got a pop shield because I'm not a Neanderthal, and that's going into a Focusrite Scarlett 2i2, which goes into my very old laptop that currently sounds like it's about to take off. It's a very, very, very old laptop that is absolutely not designed for audio production, but all of Tin Can was made on it, as well as all my other weird audio projects. I use Reaper as a DAW, D-A-W. How do you say that? I've only ever read it. Is it DAW? My workstation, basically. The program I use as workstation. I have Audacity, but I don't really use it for audio stuff just because it's really limited. Reaper does everything I need it to do, and I know how to use it, which is always nice. Also, it's what Dirk Maggs uses. So if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. For effects, I've got the Isotope RX Elements package, and the denoiser is just a lifesaver when it comes to putting audio drama together, just purely because the recording environment I'm in is so noisy. Oh, it's so loud. And it's really good. It's adaptable. It kind of adjusts on the fly, which is perfect for what I'm asking it to do. It's just a really good bit of kit. I'd highly recommend Isotope RX plugins. Something I didn't realize when I started was just how different talking on a microphone is to talking normally. I naturally talk quite quickly, but when I'm recording audio, I have to really slow it down so you can actually understand what I'm saying. So I came to audio drama from a music background, and when I was at school, I had singing lessons. And while I still can't sing, it did teach me good technique when it came to breathing exercises and warming up your voice and really opening your mouth so you can actually hear everything. It's something that is easily forgotten about. Like, learn vocal warm-ups. Like, NPR have a load of articles about how to do them. Also, if you're wanting to make a podcast, and this was the biggest mistake I made, was time management. So I kind of put the first episode of Tin Can together just to kind of show people what I could do with sound design. But then everyone I sent it to came back being like, when's the next episode coming out? And then for the next few months, I was recording and editing an episode while writing the next one, while promoting the one that had just come out. And it drove me mad. Like, I could only do 4 episodes and then I had to stop. Especially, and that was especially tricky because I was doing everything myself, like doing all the editing, all the writing, all the promotion, everything. As easy as it is to throw something out as soon as it's ready, there's a lot to be learned from taking your time and having a backlog ready to go for releasing stuff. There really is no excuse for not having an audio drama if you want to make one. I recently helped set my friend up to record podcasts, and we managed to find like a decent condenser microphone, probably about as good as this one, with a pop shield and an arm for attaching to a desk. And it was a USB microphone as well, so you didn't even need to get the kit, for less than £100. Again, less than $110. Like, that's a tiny investment. Like, all of the equipment I have, I gathered over the course of about 8 years or so, like saving up and Christmas presents and birthday presents and things. The fact is, you don't need to have top-end equipment to make a good audio drama. As long as you've got an idea and a microphone, you can make it. If Tin Can has proved anything, is that you don't need friends to make audio drama. And on that note, thank you for stopping by. I hope this rambling monologue was of some use to you. My name is David from Tin Can Audio. Thank you very much for listening.
Hello there, I'm Fiona Thrale, and thank you, Sarah, for having me back on to talk about my setup. My recording space is in a back room in a corner, and I started off with acoustic foam panels. Now, to stick them to anything, you need to have a hot glue gun. It's the only thing that'll do it. So to avoid hot gluing the walls, I went out and bought some artists' canvases, the biggest ones I could find, hot glued the acoustic foam to them. And then, of course, you've got a portable thing because you can just stick the panels up in any corner of any room. And they basically form a horseshoe shape behind my microphone. This is an old house which has picture rails up high on the walls. So I bought another canvas and, again, glued acoustic panels to it. And I've basically balanced it and then nailed it in on top of the picture rail so it creates a full ceiling, again, just to stop reflections. On top of that, I spend a lot of time in my booth on audiobooks as well as audio drama, and I wanted to make it cosy and, again, to give more layers of dampening. A lady I knew was trying to give up smoking, and so she made a lot of crocheted baby blankets in beautiful colours. So I actually have concertinaed several of those over the top of the acoustic foam, kind of hanging down like curtains behind my screen. So again, it just makes a very nice environment. And because they have huge holes in them and they're apart from the acoustic foam, again, it seems to dampen reflections and just makes a nicer recording space, if you like that kind of thing. Behind, I wanted it to be quite enclosed, so I found some changing screens online, which are just over 6 foot tall, sort of wooden canvas structures, and they fold, they're three-part screens, so you can fold it behind you to sort of close it in, and I've covered them in some velvet curtains I bought secondhand, again, to make it a bit warmer and to take away any flat surfaces. For actual equipment, I was recommended an SE-X1 microphone by Chris Barnes, who records audiobooks under Dynamic RAM up in Scotland, and he'd been using a studio up there which had SE-X1 microphones. It's a large condenser microphone, and yeah, so far I've been very happy with it. It came in a bundle with a pop screen and also with an interface. In this case, the Focusrite Scarlett 2i2, which is, again, I think we've been using this setup now for almost 4 years, and I've had no problems with it whatsoever, so I would really recommend it. The 2i2, obviously, if you've just got one microphone like I have, you could get away with the, is it the 1i1? I assume. There is one that Focusrite do, which has just one input. But as there are two, I guess if one goes wrong, then the other one will hopefully work. But so far, like I say, it's been really sturdy, really good. And yeah, cross fingers, nothing wrong. As an extra, and this really is an extra, but I really like it, I did buy a secondhand PreSonus fader port. I record in Studio One, which has the benefit of punch and roll, which is brilliant if you're doing longer pieces particularly. And the fader port is basically a lot of buttons, mainly the transport buttons are brilliant for having for punch and roll. It means a lot less clicking around with the mouse, and so it's a much smoother process. It's also got undo buttons and so on. So it is really nice. It's also got a little slider, which is pretty cool. I don't actually use Studio One for mixing, but if you do, then you can also use that slider for various functions there as well. I do find it has sped up my punch and roll process a lot. So if you are doing that kind of thing, I would actually recommend trying one out. Otherwise, I think that's it. Obviously, this isn't a perfect recording space. You know, if you do have the money to go for a proper, fully enclosed booth, go for it. And obviously, I do want to upgrade my microphone eventually and anything else. It's always good to get the best sound. But hopefully, it is an example of how you can make the best possible sound that you possibly can on your current budget at the moment. And obviously, it depends completely from environment to environment as to the kind of noise around you. But this setup does very easily pass ACX standards with very little cleaning on the RX end of things afterwards in post-production. So it is possible if you just read up everything you can on how to create a good recording environment. And yeah, all the best. I look forward to hearing what everyone else is doing out there.
Hi, I'm Michael L. Stokes from Cool Audio Productions. I'm here today to talk about my home studio. I'd like to walk you through our studio space and talk about our gear and digital environment for editing and mixing. My wife brought audio drama into our lives back in the summer of 2009. A friend of hers was asking for auditions for his first audio drama, and she was ecstatic at the opportunity and pressed me into service. I've been a musician most of my life and had a microphone and a small mixer. The mic was a Shure SM57, and the mixer was a 12-channel Mackie mixer with 4 mic preamps. The recording quality was okay, good enough to get us by at the time, so we finished our initial chunk of dialogue with this setup. Soon, everyone in the house was acting. I was recording dialogue tracks almost daily, and I started mixing the main show that we were acting in. I soon realized that our gear was less than optimal, and that our environment was pretty bad to record in. I started educating myself online and began a multi-year quest to learn everything I could about creating a home studio. I learned about the different microphone types and how best to use them. I also learned quickly that better mics reproduce everything better, including bad room acoustics. My first condenser was an Audio-Technica AT2020. It has a medium-sized condenser capsule and is well worth the $100 price tag. My next good mic purchase was a Fathead 2 ribbon mic from Cascade Microphones. I tend to be sibilant and was looking for a better mic for my voice and decided to try it. Ribbon mics are darker than condensers and good when trying to tame harsh high frequencies. Unfortunately, it was difficult to find a good place to record with it because it picked up reflections from the other side of the mic and the Mackie preamps were fairly noisy when pushed hard. I sold the Mackie and got serious about creating a vocal booth. I purchased my first set of acoustic absorption panels from ATS Acoustics, but eventually learned to make my own. So now I have a 12-foot by 13-foot dedicated control room with a 4-foot by 6-foot recording booth built in. I've laid out the control room with my mixing desk at the far end of the room, centered left to right. The desk is close to the far wall, and there are acoustic panels right behind each of the near-field monitors. To the left and right of the mixing desk are acoustic panels mounted across the corners of the room and act as edge-absorbing bass traps. I've also placed two panels spaced 5 inches apart on each of the side walls at the primary reflection points, and I've hung a panel from the ceiling over the desk at the ceiling reflection points. Lastly, I've hung a panel across the last treatable corner behind my desk to provide additional low-frequency absorption. Now my mixes sound better, and I can record instruments, amps, and vocals in here as well. In the booth, I now have 4 panels. A 4-inch panel on the back wall, a 3-inch thick panel on the front wall behind the mic, and 2 2-inch panels on the side wall. I'm using a lot less acoustic foam in the booth now, but I did use some to treat the door and the ceiling over the mic. I also added thick carpeting on the floor with thick carpet padding underneath. My mic locker now contains a nice varied assortment of mics. My main mics for voice are a Telefunken CU-29 Copperhead. This is a large condenser tube mic, a Mojave MA-201 FET, a transformer-based large condenser mic, and the previously mentioned Cascade Fathead 2 ribbon mic, which sounds even better now that we're recording in a good acoustic environment. In my rack, there's a Focusrite Sapphire Pro 40 8-channel mic pre, a Focusrite ISA-1 single mic pre, a Warm Audio Tone Beast single mic pre, 2 FMR audio compressors, the RNC and the RNLA, and all of that is fed to the computer through an Audient ID22 USB interface. The 2 single-channel mic pre's are very analog-sounding, as are the compressors. The Sapphire Pro has decent, clean-sounding mic pre's. The Audient ID22 is a 2-channel USB interface featuring 2 very clean and full-sounding mic pre's. These are as rich-sounding as they are clean. They work very well with all of my mics, and while imparting very little sonic coloration of their own, sound rich and full and very professional. This unit also features send and return loops on both channels, 2 sets of outputs, ADAT in and out, and a headphone out with a dedicated digital-to-analog converter. Switching over to the digital side of things, I have a Dell XPS workstation with an i7 processor, 16 gigs of RAM, and a 2 terabyte hard drive. I also have a Dell laptop, also an i7 processor with 8 gigs of RAM. I have an Audient ID4 attached to the laptop, and I'm able to use that as a complete recording and mixing setup on its own. I've also taken all the rack gear, the ID22 and the laptop, out for on-location multi-track recording. I record and mix primarily in Reaper. I mix audio drama primarily with Isotope and Waves plugins. The Isotope's channel strip plugins are awesome, in my opinion, for voice work and audio drama. Nectar 2 is designed for voice and vocals, and even comes with a bunch of nice presets for voice and voiceover to get you started. Alloy 2 was the first major plugin I purchased, and I've used it on everything, including voices, before I bought Nectar 2. I also use Ozone on 95% of my mixing projects. I put it on my master bus, mostly to add some light compression, EQ, and light saturation to a scene. For mastering audio drama, it's the only plugin I've ever used. Last, and certainly not least, is monitoring. I currently use Yamaha HS8 near-field monitors for mixing, AKG K701 open-back reference headphones for mixing when I need to not bug the family, and Sony MDR7506 closed-back headphones for monitoring and tracking. I have a Behringer 8-channel headphone amp in the rack, which has a dedicated feed to the recording booth. Deciding what mic and signal chain to use is always a challenge for me. I take what I know about the different mics and how they pair up with the different mic pres and try to have a strategy worked out by the time my client is here to record. That way I can have the mic mounted and the cables run in advance and spare the client some time. I really like the Telefunken CU29 on most voices. It's very smooth in the top end and adds weight and presence in the mids and low mids. It pairs nicely with the audience mic pres and the ISA1. I use this mic a lot on female clients for audio drama and narration. I've had great success with the Mojave MA201 FET condenser on male voices for the spoken word. It's my go-to mic for my voice, and I usually pair it with the ISA1, but I've begun pairing it with the Warm Audio Tone Beast as well. I like to push the ribbon mic through the ISA1 to get lots of clean gain. It sounds equally good on male voices and female voices and takes really well to EQ and mixing. I highly recommend all three of these mics for voice work, but if you don't have a lot of money, the Fat Hat 2 is a great deal. Choosing a preamp for a particular client or a particular source is still a bit of trial and error. The ISA1's multiple input impedance settings offer the most flexibility once everything's already set up, so that tends to be my go-to setup for almost any mic. I love the Tone Beast too, but it lacks sufficient clean gain for me to use it reliably for voice work on ribbon and dynamic mics. I love the saturation it produces when pushed hard for vocals and other sources, but it's just too much for the spoken word. I also love the sound of the audience preamps too, but they also don't supply enough clean gain in all situations if I'm recording with a ribbon or dynamic mic. As far as the compressors are concerned, I always keep them in the chain when I'm recording voice work. It's just a question of which one to use. I love having just enough compression to handle the peaks in louder passages. That makes retakes a lot less frequent. That's everything I can think to say about my studio in 5 to 8 minutes. I have a website at coolaudioproductions.com, and my email address is coolaudiomike@gmail.com. Please feel free to ping me if you have any questions or would like more information about any of the aspects of my presentation. If you're in the New England area and would like to visit the studio, please contact me and we can arrange it. I'm always up for a recording session or a collaborative mixing session, and I'm happy to let folks try out my gear or my recording environment. Thanks to Sarah and the Audio Drama Production Podcast for inviting me to talk about my studio and gear, and to all of you out there listening.
Greetings and salutations. My name is Ryan Baldwin, and I'm going to be giving you a breakdown of my recording setup. I'm a musician first and foremost, but I also love voice acting. Being a musician contributed to my desire to be able to record high-quality audio at home. Things like talk radio, cartoons, and video games have all contributed to my desire to do voice acting. That being said, I've spent a lot of time in and out of recording studios, learning the difference between good gear and bad gear, and learning recording techniques online. So here is my total vocal chain from my voice to how it gets to the computer. Every good recording starts with a good room. The room I'm recording in is actually my bedroom. It's 10 foot by 12 foot with an 8 foot ceiling. I've treated the room by hanging heavy-duty cargo or moving blankets from the floor to ceiling on each wall, in some cases two layers. Then, I've taken two acoustic panels and mounted them on the ceiling as cloud panels. These panels are 2 foot by 4 foot with 2-inch thick acoustic foam. I have them mounted with eye hooks and heavy-duty picture wire, and they actually sit about an inch or two off the ceiling. This is intentional, because when it comes to wall or ceiling-mounted panels, you actually want that little air gap, because the sound will hit the panel, get absorbed, go through the panel, reflect off the hard surface behind it, and then get absorbed again. So this actually makes it more effective at absorbing sound. Also, since it's a bedroom, I have a queen-size bed which helps absorb and diffuse more of the sound. My computer is actually in another room, so I don't get any computer noise, but I also didn't want the issue of constantly running back and forth since I'm both the engineer and the person being recorded. Then I saw a woman on YouTube who had her closet set up as a vocal booth, and to prevent having to do that, she was using a wireless keyboard and hotkeys to trigger her software, which I thought was a great idea, so that's what I'm doing now. From there, we have the microphone I'm speaking into. This is an Audio-Technica AT4040. Now, this is a large diaphragm condenser mic, kind of mid-tier. This mic runs about $299 new. I bought this to replace a more expensive mic I have, which is a Rode NTK, which is a tube condenser mic. After changing both the capsule and the tube in that mic, I found that it sounded better, but still wasn't a great fit for my voice. So one thing I recommend if you're starting out is to do what I did, which is to go to a local recording studio or contact a buddy that has a few different mics and just try a bunch of different mics. There are a ton of different microphones for all kinds of budgets out there. Just because a mic is expensive or people say it's the best, doesn't mean it's the best fit for your voice. In my case, I found that cheaper mics that didn't have an overly hyped top end sounded better on my voice. The AT4040 is a darker sounding LDC and has more in common with a mic like the Shure SM7B, which I also own, but with more clarity. Now, the SM7B is a large diaphragm dynamic mic and a great mic in its own right, but it's more suited to broadcast applications like radio, podcasting, or if you're streaming games or other content. In front of the mic, I'm using a Stedman Pro XL metal pop filter, which is actually louvered so it redirects bursts of air down and away from the mic. Next, we run into my external preamp, which is the Focusrite ISA-1. This is a transformer-based preamp with a lot of gain, so you can power mics like the aforementioned Shure SM7B or the Electro Voice RE20 without the need for a cloud lifter. From there, I'm running into a Focusrite 2i4 USB audio interface. The 2i4 is a low-latency interface, so it's great for monitoring with effects in real-time. I'm running it in a Reaper as my DAW and recording at 24-bit, 96 kHz. Now, despite the fact that they are both Focusrite products, the preamp in the ISA-1 sounds noticeably better than the built-in preamps on the interface. It's more of a warmer, fuller sound, so these things do make a difference. Whether that difference is worth the money is completely up to you. As for my computer, it was built to be a high-end gaming PC, so it works well for recording audio as well. I'm running Windows 10 64-bit off of a 250-gig SSD. I'm recording the two separate storage drives, a 2TB and a 5TB HDD. This is all being driven by an Intel i7-6700K quad-core processor at 4.0 GHz, 32GB of DDR4 RAM, and a GTX 1080 Ti graphics card. A bit overkill, but it ensures I always have the power that I need. For plugins, I'm using Reaper's stock EQ plugin, as well as a collection of other plugins by Waves, IK Multimedia's T-Rax 3 series, and doing final mastering and limiting with Isotope Ozone 7. All in all, I'm really liking the sound I'm getting. I haven't used any sort of noise reduction or gating on this, and listen to how quiet it is when I stop talking. Completely silent. And with the way the room is treated, I can be really loud or very, very quiet. No room reflections, so pretty good. So that's the full breakdown of my setup. Obviously, like anyone else, I'm always chasing new gear. Hopefully you guys got some useful information out of this. If you have any questions, feel free to hit me up by emailing ryansombrero@gmail.com or tweet at ribaldhumor on Twitter. That's R-Y-B-A-L-D humor. Take care, guys, and best of luck in your adventures in audio.
Amazing. Yeah, there's quite an array of different styles of gear and different reasons why they use it and how they use it. So, you know, if you would like to contact those folks, please do check our show notes and jump on, connect, talk, ask questions, speak to each other. And thanks so much for all of you folks for sharing your gear and your kit with us. And back to you, Misha. Yes. Now, I would like to, if I may, probe some of your thoughts about this amazing medium. So we've been talking on various forums and things. So do you think that with the Bright Sessions potentially moving into television, and a few others being picked up for that medium, do you think that's a good thing for audio drama, or do you think that we should perhaps stay purist and that these brilliant stories should simply stay being told in an audio only medium?
Oh, I know this has been a big topic of conversation on the Facebook group.
Yes, it's been quite contentious, yes.
I tended to stay out of it when it was there, but now you've got me pinned down, I guess. I think there's positives and negatives to TV and podcasts colliding. I think that it brings eyes to the medium in an important way for how the media industrial complex works. I think that there are more eyes with deep pockets looking at audio drama than ever before. And honestly, I, from working in audio so many years, I can tell you, unfortunately, money has a direct correlation with quality in audio in a way that doesn't invalidate low budget creators, just in a way that, like, when something had a lot of money, it tends to sound really good.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that influx of cash is good for creators who want to tell grander stories. That influx of eyes and attention gets people listening to the medium as a whole, so that, like, the really good shows, the ones that really, really deserve to be seen by a wide audience, can. That said, I'm worried about TV executives who now see audio drama as, like, the kiddie pool before they try to sell an IP to a network, to a TV network. I'm worried about people who come in and say, I'm treating this medium as a pilot. This is like a backdoor pilot to try to make a TV show, because TV shows are expensive to make and audio dramas are cheap. But I like that there's an opportunity for, like, the very cream of the crop to get the wider recognition they deserve. Like, Lauren Shippen is a writing genius, and she deserves, like, every inch of the TV shows she's going to get. And it's going to be gorgeous. Like, I'm not even involved in the TV show. I don't really care. It's going to be so cool, and she deserves it.
Yes.
But, you know, Yes, so I worry about what the money side of it thinks of us, but I'm excited for the opportunity for the creators among us that offers.
Yeah, and do you think the secret lies in collaboration, or do you think it's feasible for someone to just throw a curveball and get to the very top with a very fabulous and original story, pretty much doing everything themselves? Because I guess, you know, there have been successful versions of that, but do you think someone can do that?
I think that you can make it to the top with doing everything yourself. The Bright Sessions is a clear example. Night Vale is a clear example that, like, just doing a really good product and, like, you know, a little bit of right place, right time, and a lot of hard work, it can pay off for you.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
But I think that throwing a lot of money and especially a high-profile cast at an audio drama will make it rise higher than maybe it deserves. Or there's drastic potential for that sort of scenario in the future. I think that you shouldn't be afraid of working with powers that be who want to get in the game. But I think you need to be aware that you're going to have to fight for some things, and in that case, you need to really make sure you know which things are important to fight for. I you know, like there are casting concerns that a lot of people are going to worry over when translating something to TV, and you're not going to win every fight, and you need to go into those knowing you're not going to win every fight so that you can try to win the ones that are super important.
Interesting, guys. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot of other issues that do arise from that transition, absolutely.
Yeah, especially with Hollywood the way it is. You know, I live in LA, I work in that place. I know exactly what's happening in the industry right now.
So, what do people need to be doing then to be aiming higher for that kind of top echelon of creation?
Seeking out feedback and then listening to it is really important. If you know, ask people who are making stuff what they think, and make sure you're asking people who you know might not tell you that, oh, it's great, you know, oh, it's fantastic, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. You know, find some people who are going to be harsh and listen to them when they tell you stuff. Not necessarily everything they say, but everything they say has a reason behind it. You know, it's not always about what they say, it's about why they're saying it, or that they're saying something. But taking that and iterating and learning and making something the next time. I like fell into podcasts with Ars Paradoxica. It was originally like a radio show and then a weird ARG thing. And it just happened that my first podcast was pretty good and people liked it. But your first one may not be great, and that's okay. That doesn't invalidate it. It's one step towards being great. But you have to be aware when something's going wrong, and you really have to be self-critical and fix it.
I have decided to be a lot more critical when people ask me, because at one point I was kind of flatlining, I guess, about what I was giving back to people and holding back a bit. But actually, I now think I just go in all guns are blazing because I just think we do need to improve. And I have an opinion and I will now share it fully fledged. So, but I know and hope people know that it's just one opinion and, you know, you don't have to change anything that I've suggested. It's up to you. It's your work. But things like, what are my bugbears? Things like stock sound effects being used badly, footsteps just repeated and repeated annoyingly, keyboard taps like random. What is going on there? Just unreally jarring transitions. Transitions annoy me. I don't know why. I'll keep harping on about that. Or say there's no background atmosphere. Or, I don't know, it's clearly looped sounds. They annoy me at the moment. And seemingly they're just sort of slammed in there. There's no real sense of place. And I do think folks need to really invest a bit more care and time to just really give your audience that immersive experience. If your podcast is asking for that, because some of them aren't, are they? What do you think? Would you agree?
I will say this. Transitions in audio are so tough. They are one of the hardest things to figure out. Ars Paradoxica, I did like a really easy thing in that I gave it a frame story that has to do with like radio and audio tapes. So I just do like little radio blips, and that's my transition sound. And not that you can't do that, but oh man, is the found footage genre played out in audio drama these days. Maybe if you're doing a found footage audio drama, consider not doing it.
Yes, find another way. The audio gauntlet is thrown.
But there are ways, and honestly, this is one of the things I struggled over with the Far Meridian, because the Far Meridian is just like camera on. There's no narrator, there's no frame story, and there's flashbacks, there's flash forwards, there's like cutting from scene to scene. And I was so worried about, like, with trying to keep up this magical air when, like, scenes were moving. And I don't know how I'm doing. I feel like it's okay. But
it's not,
I...
It's not just okay. It's amazing. It's
thank you.
Well, it's very clearly defined. If you do want a brilliant example of transitions and moving from place to place cleanly and well signposted, then, yeah, go listen to the Farmer Radio. Come on, if you haven't already. It's just an excellent example of transition. So, yes, you shouldn't be sorry about that at all. So.
Okay. But it's just, it's hard. And I know it's hard. And coming up with a convention, you know, you can't just like show a new place and then have your characters be there. And, you know, that's a TV show. Like they can just show an office building and then everybody's wearing suits and you're like, oh, it's in an office. With audio drama, there's nothing like that. So you really have to forge your own way. And it's a very hard thing to balance. And so anybody who breaks away from the found footage only to find that they have no idea what their transitions mean anymore, like, good on you for trying. It's very hard. I think that that's key to immersion, is figuring out how to move gracefully. I think that taking care in each sound effect you choose is important, and making sure that they are all meshing together to create one cohesive world. That can be hard for people without access to giant sound effect libraries. Again, I've been working in this industry for almost 14 years, and so I just accrued like 700 gigabytes of sound effects. And not everybody has those, and I know that.
Do you know, there should be a section in every library across the universe with a sound effects library in your name.
I would give them to more people, except that the copyright issues involved in that is very tricky. But, you know, just like anything you can do, if you can't find sound effects, consider recording your own. If you record all of your door closings and openings and all of your footsteps in your apartment, and you decide like that's what your main character's house sounds like, if they're all from the same place and they're all using the same microphone, it's going to create a better sense of place than just using random stuff. I guarantee it.
Superb, yes. And what, just for example, would you use to record those if you were going to go around your house doing roving recording?
I hold my AT2035s on a mic stand, like a boom, but it's like really janky. I also have a Zoom H4N recorder, which is old, and the H5 and the H6 are both way better. So if you can get your hands on those, do that.
Good advice. Yes. Yes, a lot of people have been talking about those as well. And you know, keep your eye out for good deals on those.
Yes.
And we will try and share some if we find any good ones on the ADP PFB page, Facebook page. And thank you, people. If you are somebody who is actually very good at sharing, you know, if you've thrown some sound effects bundles or things you've found, then thank you so, so much for sharing those on your page, because that has helped a lot of people. So. Okay, Misha, final top tips then. If folks want to do what you're doing, what would you suggest they do first?
Step one, listen to everything you can get your hands on. As much time as you have. Like, don't burn yourself out, but be constantly intaking new things. Step two, be meticulous. Choose everything with care. Do everything until it's exactly right. Don't settle. Like, push yourself. Step three, and that's part of step two, is be critical and let yourself receive criticism, but also know what's worth fighting for. Not everything is, and know that up front, but know what is, and try to figure that out. And I think that's it. And those are all not tech things, but like, oh yeah, dead rooms and good microphones mean that you can live your dreams, because you can put a flat sounding voice anywhere and it can do anything.
Yes, I know. Casey Raylan showed in our second virtual pub session, which will be at some point on the Patreon account. Hello, patrons. Thank you for patronizing us. He showed some plugins that he got with a very simple button press. You can change the soundscape from like creating the believable sound of being in a car, being outside a car, in a boat, I don't know, a helicopter. It was really cool. He just very quickly transitioned from thing to thing. So if you've got the pennies, then you can potentially, yeah, find these amazing things.
I mean, I don't mean to try to one-up Casey Whalen, but like the Far Meridian's made entirely out of my closet, and we went from inside a talking mountain to being chased by alligators to being on Mars to inside of a concrete labyrinth in the middle of the desert, and it was all made from the same place.
Oh, wow. Okay, this is an official audio challenge here, folks. I think someone needs to one-up Misha.
Let's go, Casey.
Come on. I love that. Audio fight.
Bring it on. No, Casey Whalen's a good guy, and we've been trying to work together, but our schedules are both very crazy.
Oh, well, we can wait for that. We can bide our time.
Okay.
Well, superb. Thanks. Thank you so much, Misha, for giving your time today. And you are about on the ADPP site now and then, huh? People can find you.
You know, I sort of lurk around the Facebook group sometimes, and I try to be pretty accessible by social media. If you ever have any questions, just drop me a line.
Superb. Well, thank you so much. And, you know, it's very lovely having folks such as you saying things like that to help make this audio fun progress.
Sure, my pleasure.
Happy creating. And I do hope this year, 2018, is even more amazing and exciting for you. And also for all the folks we've heard from today, Fiona Thrail, David Devereaux, Ryan Baldwin and Michael Stokes. Thank you to my amazing editor, Austin Beach, and Matthew Boudreau of the Audio Drama Network. So, yes, let's keep on creating. Enjoy your tech. Have a look at our show notes for some top tips of some of the equipment you've heard about today. And thank you very much. Have fun. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.